Len Berman, Michael Riedel.
On 710 WOO.
And on the Republican side, well, we're going to be joined by Fernando Mateo. He's going to join us at 8:35 this morning. And tomorrow morning, we'll talk to Curtis Sliwa. He may wind up being the nominee on the Republican side for mayor. So, also in the Big Three, getting back to normal. The first MSG concert was last night. They were the Foo Fighters. Citi Field returns to full capacity for the Mets tonight. And rounding out the Big Three, well, a new era in radio begins today at noon right here on 710 WOR. It's the debut of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton show. And, of course, they'll be replacing the late Rush Limbaugh, and we wish them the best of luck. It's tough to replace a legend, and hopefully the guys will be up to the task, and we're rooting for them. Also today is Amazon Prime Day, which is lasting two full days, which tells you why you really haven't heard from Natalie much on the show today, because that's what she lives for, this kind of stuff. Oh, coming up at 9:05, one of the stars of one of Michael's favorite TV shows is going to join us.
Exciting and new.
The love boat.
Come aboard. We're expecting you.
The bartender, Ted Lang, is going to join us at 9:05. Michael, you loved that show, didn't you?
Yeah, as a kid, you know, it was a lot of fun. Kind of cheesy, but we watched it every Saturday. You watched Love Boat, and then you watched Fantasy Island. You know, Ted Lang, Julie Tweez. What was her name? Tweez? She played the cruise director there. Gavin McLeod, who just left us, sad to say. Bernie Kelly, yeah. The doctor. Yeah, they were great. Fun cast.
Yeah.
It was kind of, you know, I can't wait to talk to Ted Lang, because I bet they had a blast. I mean, can you imagine your job is to be on a one-hour ABC highly rated TV show set on a cruise ship, and so you're probably on the cruise ship, zipping around, having a great time, wherever the ship is going, because they filmed it. They filmed a lot of it on the ship.
And he's serving drinks, so it must have been a fun party, drinks. Right?
It was. Absolutely.
All right.
Oh, I made a mistake.
Ted Lang joins us at 9:05. Well, right now we're joined by another party guy, Steve Roberts, ABC News political analyst in Washington. Hey, Steve, I hope you had a great Father's Day.
I did. I had a couple of grandchildren, my son, daughter-in-law, sitting out on the deck of here in South Carolina. It was lovely. But missing my own dad so much on a day like that, too.
Yeah.
He was my first editor, my biggest cheerleader. I became a writer because of him. He was a writer himself. He wrote 10 children's books, and I keep my dad's books right behind me on my bookshelf in case I ever forget my source of inspiration, but I'm not going to forget it, but I keep the books there anyway.
I didn't know you were down in South Carolina. You should go over and visit Joe Bartlett at Hilton Head.
Yeah, we're about 100 miles from Hilton Head. But,
oh, well, he's not worth 100 miles of car travel.
It's too long a drive. Forget about it.
Yeah, forget that. All right, what did you think of the big summit meeting? Biden and Putin head-to-head. Did it go anywhere? Did it mean anything?
Well, yes, it did mean something. It meant that we're back to normal conduct of diplomacy. We're not focused on the mercurial and tempestuous and totally unpredictable, unreliable personality of one president. And that was the whole point. Biden wanted to say, look, diplomacy is back. Normality is back. I value our friendships. I value our alliances. I'm going to stand up to Putin. I don't pretend he's a friend. But at the same time, we're going to try to find ways in which we can cooperate, which is the way nations do normally relate to each other. And so there were very few practical deliverables, as they say, but was there an important difference in tone? I think yes, and I think our allies are grateful that there's somebody in the White House now who understands diplomacy and understands the value of alliances.
But Steve, do you really think Putin cares? I mean, just looking at Putin, I don't know how many five presidents he's been with. I think he just sees they're coming and they're going, and I'll just go about my business and do whatever I want to do.
Yeah, but there are, you know, at the same, that's true. But at the same time, Russia is involved in the world. And when you have external relations, you have to worry about, at some level, the impact you have. If you're going to be pushing aggressively into eastern Ukraine, what kind of friction does that cause with NATO? If you're going to be encouraging cyber hacking, what kind of retaliation do you invite? I mean, you can't. Does Putin care on one level? No. But if you're not going to be a country that's totally isolated, if you're going to have trading relationships, military relationships, digital relationships, then you have to understand the impact you have on other people. And I think that's part of what Biden was trying to say.
Hey, Steve, you have a pretty good feel of what goes on in Washington. I mean, nothing makes me glaze over more than when I hear the word infrastructure. I mean, there was no infrastructure deal the last 4 years, and now, you know, it just seems to all get bogged down. You know, one party is not going to let the other party have a victory, and here we go again. So are we ever going to have infrastructure deals?
Yeah, actually, I think we will. I think it'll be a modest deal. It won't be anything like the Bernie Sanders, AOC, dream deal where they want to raise trillions of dollars in taxes on the rich and spend trillions of dollars on health care and other issues. I don't think that's going to happen. But I do think a more modest bill, around $1 trillion, you already have 11 Republican senators saying they'll buy into this. And there are about five reasons why I think it might happen. The first is that, as we discussed before, infrastructure is nonpartisan. This is not Democratic money on welfare. This is on bridges and roads and tunnels. Republicans have just as much of an interest, if not more so, because businesses and commerce depend on this infrastructure, Republican constituents. Secondly, there are jobs, and these construction jobs also go to a lot of Republicans. And third, Republicans have a certain incentive in being able to say, when the election comes along, see, you know, we've delivered too, you know, and we've been part of a constructive compromise. And Biden wants this. Biden wants it badly because he wants to be able to say to voters, look, I campaigned on being bipartisan. I accomplished something important. And it's a template for possible negotiations in the future. So there's still a big problem over how to pay for it, because it's easy to split the difference when you're talking about arithmetic and how much to spend. How to pay for it, you get into principle. Democrats say, don't raise taxes. Democrats say, let's raise taxes. Republicans say, never raise taxes. That's much harder to reconcile. But in the end, they're going to find a way to raise money and not call it taxes. And that's the sweet spot there. So I do think there'll be an infrastructure bill. It'll be about $1 trillion. There'll be a lot of money in it for new tunnels into Manhattan. A lot of people in the New York area are going to benefit from it.
So Kamala Harris the other week, not a great performance there, talking about the border. I mean, Lester Holt at NBC gave her a look like, you haven't been to the border. Now you're telling me you've been to the border. Are people in the White House disappointed in how she's doing with her big assignment of trying to protect our borders?
You know, I'm not sure. I think there's got to be some concern. But let's remember, she's still very new to the national scene. Yes, she did run for president. She did not run a very particularly effective campaign when she was on her own. And you know, I've covered so many presidents and vice presidents, and I don't care how experienced you are, the intensity of the national spotlight is something it's very hard to prepare for. Even as a senator, you're not in a situation where every single word you say is subject to so much scrutiny and so much analysis and so much nuance. And I think she's just learning. And I don't think she's made any major mistakes, but I do think it's clear that she's still learning how to operate in an environment where every single word you say, every single minute you're on television, can be magnified, duplicated, posted, resent, and amplified beyond anything you've ever experienced before. And she's still in a learning stage.
All right, Steve Roberts, ABC News political analyst in Washington and South Carolina. Thanks, Steve. Talk to you next week, pal.
Excellent. Take care.
All right, Steve. Michael, I know the Post lists every day. It's been another day since she hasn't been to the border. You know, she should probably just go there and get a photo op and get the hell out of there so that she doesn't have to deal with this anymore.
Yeah, I don't get why she doesn't go to the border. don't know what the point is. I mean, unless she doesn't want to draw attention to the fact that the border is a complete disaster area, as we know it is. Yeah. But, you know, the Biden administration is covering it up, so.
Well, and also a lot of attention is being given to her, but really, in essence, the vice president's kind of a, you know, lost cause, just a secondary figure. Anyway, coming up next, Maria Bartiromo. Interesting, she's defending herself. Now, she is a frequent target of the left. What does Maria have to say? And that is coming up.
Our iHeart Music Festival is back, and you can win your way in before you can buy the tickets. Live performances by Cheap Trick, Coldplay, Journey, Maroon 5. September 17th and 18th at T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas. Two nights, one stage. Listen to win tickets before you can buy them, plus airfare and hotel accommodations in Vegas. Now, your next chance to text in and win happens Wednesday, 9:05 a.m., and our exclusive Capital One cardholder presale starts Wednesday, June 23rd. That's this Wednesday. 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Len Berman and Michael Riedel in the morning.
710 WOR.
Well, a lot of tension between Tucker Carlson over there on Fox and Brian Stetler. He's the media correspondent at CNN. And Stetler was on the other day saying, how come Fox is not following up on Tucker Carlson's wild and baseless claims that the January 6th Capitol insurrection was an FBI plot? Stetler's going on and on and on about this. And Tucker Carlson says some pretty disparaging things about Stetler on his show. So you got these two guys sniping at each other. Now, there's an interesting story about Tucker Carlson. Did you see this in the New York Times, Len?
I did.
So Tucker Carlson, who, you know, is against the mainstream media, the lamestream media, as he would call it. But, of course, Tucker's been around a long, long time. He's got a lot of friends in the mainstream media. And according to this New York Times report, Tucker actually is one of the big sources for the mainstream media when they're writing about Trump and when they're writing about Fox. That Tucker has leaked some stuff to the lamestream media about Trump and about Fox. So kind of interesting thing going on there. And this article implies that Tucker is kind of given a pass on a lot of stuff, maybe not by Brian Stetler, but by others, because he's considered a gold-plated source for a lot of the lamestream media. So, complicated.
I don't know about you. Stuff going on there. I'm just kind of tired of the whole Fox versus CNN thing. I mean, really. I mean, they go on. So the CNN people go on and on about how much they hate Fox, and the Fox people go on all the time and talk about how much they hate CNN. But what does it matter? Because the people watching Fox agree with the Fox reporters about CNN, and the people who watch CNN agree with the CNN reporters about Fox. So basically, they're just preaching to their own choirs, and at some point, I'm just tired of it. You know, when they start banging on the other network, I just lose interest. I think if you're worried about what the other guy is doing, then you're taking your eye off the prize. You should worry about your own house and keep your own house in order and do the best job you can do and stop worrying about the other people. That's my philosophy. I don't know how you felt. Did you sit there at the Post worrying about what the Daily News guy was writing about Broadway?
No, never. But I would never have attacked the Daily News in any way. I mean, I agree with you. My job was to get the scoops on Broadway, and if I had a good front page story at the New York Post, that's all I cared about, and I knew the Daily News would be scrambling to try to match it the next day, and I didn't need to rub salt in their wound. You know, you take the high road.
Yeah. Another person who gets and I've criticized her, Maria Bartiromo. You know, I wonder what happened to her because she was a really good money reporter. They called her the money honey. And now she's really, you know, she went off to the deep right and supported everything Trump did, which is her prerogative. But anyway, she was on over the weekend and she was talking with Ron Johnson. He's a senator who seems to stir up a lot of people on the left with his theories, and she said, well, I, you know, people want to criticize me, fine, just keep at it.
We have been telling every story, we've been on the right side of it for 7 years going. I've been trashed every day along the way. Keep trashing me, I'll keep telling the truth.
All righty, Maria, you keep telling the truth as you see it, but keep telling the truth.
You know, listen, I've been trashed all, I was trashed all over the place when I was, you know, the controversial columnist for the New York Post. And my philosophy was always don't engage. If they're trashing you, it means you're having an impact. It means you're affecting things. So why would I stoop down to their level and defend myself? I just sail on, do my stories, get the best stories I can, and if they're talking about me, I don't care what they say. They're talking about me.
I got to tell you a funny story. You're the one who broke the Faye Dunaway story, right, about what a diva she was and how she got fired. Your buddy Nathan Lane was on Colbert the other night. He just told this hilarious story, and he was talking about the old Ed Sullivan show and how there was a lion tamer on the old Ed Sullivan show, and he said the lion tamer had a chair and a whip and a gun, and he said, well, that's how they handled Faye Dunaway also back in the 80s. And I thought of you when I heard the Nathan Lane line. I think it went over a lot of people's heads, but I thought of you, Michael.
That's great. Speaking of Nathan, Natalie, I sent you the email from him. He will come on, but maybe in beginning of July, I think.
I spoke. I contacted him. We're all good. We're working on
it. He's a funny guy. Funny guy.
The best. All right, news time from Joe Bartlett, 8:30. Good morning, Joe.
Morning, Michael. Last full day on the campaign trail for the candidates running for mayor of New York City over the weekend. Catherine Garcia and Andrew Yang were campaigning together, but Garcia denied they're trying to cut a deal and take down Eric Adams.
Let me be very clear. I'm not co-endorsing. We are campaigning together. We are promoting ranked choice voting.
Yang and Garcia say they just want to highlight ranked choice voting is how they're going to do the voting this year, and it should be taken advantage of. By the way, a 42-year-old campaign volunteer for Eric Adams was stabbed yesterday. Adams says the man was stabbed with an ice pick at least four times.
The police department is now investigating. There is a video, so that's going to be very helpful. And I'm sure as soon as they can speak with him, they'll find out exactly what happened.
Interesting point here. Eric Adams, the Law and Order candidate in the race, his campaign worker, or volunteer, I should say, had 50 prior arrests. So there may be some ties to the suspects they're looking for. The crime continues to be a problem underground as well. Felony crimes increased from 111 in April to 168 last month. Felony assaults nearly doubled in the subway. The city's recovery could be derailed because of a shortage of subway workers. More than 5,000 trains were canceled during the first 18 days of June because of a worker shortage. The issue is more than 150 transit workers died during the pandemic, and others decided to simply retire. Governor Murphy says he's open to some kind of incentive to get people to return to work in New Jersey. One idea being proposed, a $500 bonus if you'd only go back to work. Many people have been reluctant to return because unemployment benefits are kind of generous. Why work when you can sit at home and collect as much money? Murphy says a lot of businesses have already begun to pay their workers more in order to get them back. Speaking of work, construction begins tonight on the Brooklyn Bridge. It will impact traffic, a lane of traffic being removed in order to create two-way bike paths. Work begins at 9 o'clock tonight, and it's going to continue into the fall. Finally, a former baseball writer says she was raped by a player back in 2002. Cat O'Brien writes in the Times that she was 22 years old and was writing for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. She refused to name the player but says they were in a hotel room for an interview when he pushed his way on top of her. O'Brien says she later turned down a job that would have forced her to cover that player, eventually left sports journalism altogether because of the attack, and also said she didn't date for 4 years as a result of that. A lot of people trying to figure out who this player was, but she has refused to identify him.
I think she said only he was not a member of the Texas Rangers. I think that's
Rangers,
there was
another two teams she ruled. I think the Yankees, not a Yankee either.
And she said the real reason why is still that she feels that these professional athletes have so much power over, you know, the media, and that she doesn't feel like it's going to be a good thing for her and her career and her life.
She went to the front office and they did nothing.
Yep. Mm. That they're terrible. Always protected. That's what she felt.
You know, you could Google around that time to see who she was writing about. If the story that she was
Michael,
doing
you would
guy
do
ever
that,
appeared.
Wouldn't you?
Well, it's maybe called, he didn't. Maybe she didn't write about him. You know.
Well, maybe she didn't, but it's worth checking out. I mean, that's what investigative reporters such as myself do, Natalie.
Well, go for it, Michael. Get back to us.
Go for it, Michael.
Well, maybe not.
Now we know why you were so liked amongst your colleagues and competitors at the newspaper.
All right, up next, Fernando Mateo. He's running for mayor of New York City in the Republican primary tomorrow. He joins us. What is his plan to tamp down crime in the city? Fernando Mateo coming up next.
It doesn't get more New York than this. Len Berman and Michael Riedel in the morning on 710 WOR.
Well, with so much focus on the Democratic side in tomorrow's primary, we have a couple of Republicans, Fernando Mateo going up against Curtis Sliwa. And we've had Fernando Mateo on before. We enjoyed him as a guest in the past, and we welcome him back with tomorrow's primary taking place. So good morning to you, Fernando. And how's your poll? What's your internal polling telling you? Are you gaining some traction?
Good morning, Len. Good morning, Michael. Our internal polling shows that we are way ahead of Curtis Sliwa. I don't think he's done the job. He hasn't worked as hard as I have because he's not a worker. I got matching funds because I worked very hard, and I got over 3,000 donations in order to get the funds that we have. He hasn't done the work. He didn't get matching funds. So I think that in the last 2 days, well, 3 days, it'll be a landslide. I will beat him by a huge number.
So wow. Let's say, Fernando, that you do win the primary, and it looks like you could well go up against Eric Adams. Now, Eric Adams is being positioned as the kind of law and order guy here. Do you take any issue with that? Because once upon a time, I think Eric Adams was quite critical of the police of which he was a member.
Well, listen, first of all, it's not if I win, it's when I win. We will be celebrating this on Wednesday. And I'm the only candidate that could really beat Eric Adams or any of the Democrats that are out there. Remember, for 30 years, I've done a lot of work for all of New Yorkers. Eric Adams doesn't have that kind of record. You know, there's not a left in this party and there's not a right. There's only an up and there's a down. The Democrats are the down party. We are the up party. I am the up guy. We will take this city and we will make it what it should be, making sure that our police officers have the resources they need to do their job. We need to unhandcuff them. We need to make sure that they do what they have to do. Realize that Eric Adams has been in office for 20 years. And although Eric Adams has been out there, he's created nothing to make changes in New York. It's only now that they talk about, oh, the you know, he's done this, he's done that. He's done really nothing for New York. I have done something for New York. And in our debates, we will be able to get all that out. 30% of New York's population are Hispanics. I worked very hard for the Hispanic community. And I know that the 500,000 to 700,000 votes from those Hispanics will come to me. Not because I'm Hispanic, but because of the work that I've done, the groundwork I've done for the last 30 years. Curtis Sliwa doesn't stand a chance in the general elections. In fact, Curtis Sliwa was not a Republican. Curtis Sliwa is a mole in our party, a guy that's trying to create distraction so that the Democrats stay in office. We all know that he's been a Democrat, an independent, and a reform party guy for his entire life. He's a never Trumper, never voted for Trump. Hates Trump. And you know what? We don't need someone to distract our party right now. We need unity in order to win. And I will win. And when I win, I will beat Eric Adams. I will beat whomever the Democratic primary winner is because of the work that I have done, not because of the political career that I've had like many of the Democrats running for mayor.
Love your energy. Love your confidence, Fernando. Tell us some of your other programs. The city is in a bad way right now. What else are you recommending that you want to change?
Well, the city's got to be cleaned up. You know, the city's a mess. You know, the homelessness out there, the mentally ill, our subway system. I mean, I would have two cops in every subway creating a safe haven of every train station throughout New York City. I will make sure that kids 14 through 18 years old have a job after school. They are the biggest problems that we have in this city. It's all these kids after school, not doing anything, not learning anything, not having any responsibility. So they go out there and they get in trouble. They wind up in jail, and here we have a jail system full of kids. We need to get the kids off the streets. Len, Michael, when I was 14 years old, I dropped out of school. I was victim of a very bad school system. And what did I do? My father said to me, you want to be a man? Go out and get a job. I was adopted by a Jewish family who taught me the rights and the wrongs of life, who held my hand and taught me how to succeed. And I am the man I am today because of that Jewish family that I adore. Now, we need to give those same opportunities to kids 14 through 18. If they're in high school, let them work at Facebook. I will engage every corporation in New York City. I will engage every small business in the city, supermarkets, bodegas, corporate America. Every city agency will have to employ kids after school. That's how, if you take a 14-year-old today, in 7 years, he will have direction. If you take an 18-year-old today, in 3 years, he'll have direction. Our kids have no direction, so we're spinning our wheels. We're doing what we're not supposed to do, and we're ignoring the bigger problems, which is the youth in New York City. So that's what I want to do. I want to get into the gut of the inner cities, the gut of the hood where I come from, and I want to bring these kids out of that and into a better life. That's the kind of mayor I will be. Law and order, economy, small business, job creation. Fix the homelessness problem, because it's easily fixed, but politicians have no vision. They have no view because they've never worked. They've never paid a bill in their life. They've never paid rent. They've never met payroll. They never paid taxes. They don't know what it is to get up in the morning, hey, open up a business, and close it late at night.
Hey, Fernando, I live here in the West Village, and Washington Square Park has become like an open-air drug market and really sleazy. It looks like it was in the 1980s. Specifically, what would you do to clean it up and make it into the beautiful park it should be?
You know, I would shut it down. I mean, we don't have this situation at Central Park, and we don't have it in any park around the city. It's all the left-wing liberals that are down in the West Village, I'm sorry to say, that have allowed this to happen. Now they're complaining. They talk about, you know what, people have rights. Yes, people have rights. They don't have rights to violate other people's rights. And that's what's happening in New York right now. We have a bunch of criminals that are dictating and dominating what our city is doing. And when you try to take care of things, they try to protest and loot and burn cars. You know what? That's over when I am the mayor. We're going to get law and order here, and we're going to do whatever it takes to get there. Giuliani didn't have it easy when he was mayor. Giuliani came in and he fixed things. Why? Because he had the determination. He had the resources to do it. I will bring resources back to NYPD. I will bring community resources into our community that's going to change all of these things.
Hey, Fernando.
Out of the box. Yes.
Fernando, we got to run, but we love having you on. We wish you the best of luck tomorrow. And hopefully if you win, you'll come back. We love your passion and your excitement you're bringing towards this. So keep at it, and hopefully we'll talk soon, Fernando.
Len, Michael, see you, Fernando. Thank you very much for the opportunity. Have a great day.
Okay, bye-bye. You too. Fernando Mateo, running on the Republican side. Up next, a top-selling author. Well, yeah, not Michael exactly, but one of his faves, Meghan Markle. And at 9:05, the bartender from The Love Boat, Ted Lang. If your mobility isn't like it used to be, or you're living with nagging pain, then you need to make an appointment with my friends at Trinity Rehab. They will restore your freedom to live life pain-free. This is cutting-edge, state-of-the-art physical therapy that will improve your life. Trinity Rehab has the EPAP machine. It's FDA-approved, non-surgical, acoustic, pressure wave technology. It breaks up scar tissue, enhances healing, and gets rid of pain fast. It's effective for back or neck pain, tennis elbow, shoulder tendonitis, plantar fasciitis, and knee pain. In just 3 5-minute sessions, you could be virtually pain-free. It's so effective that Olympic athletes and a local pro football team use EPAT for their injuries. There's no prescription needed to get started. Trinity has 29 clinics throughout New Jersey, including Wayne, Shrewsbury, Short Hills, and now open in Woodbridge. Call 800-518-0977 or visit their website, trinity-rehab.com. That's trinity-rehab.com.
You're riding in with Len Berman and Michael Riedel in the morning on WOR.
Well, you got to hand it to that calculating little Meghan Markle. You know, she snapped up Harry from the royal family, and then she put it into his head that the family was destroying him, and then she does the Oprah Winfrey interview. She's all over the place. She was a third-rate actress, and now, you know, she's one of the most famous women on the planet. Well, she's adding to her portfolio of publicity a new book she has called The Bench, some sort of children's book, which I will never read, but has officially reached number one on the New York Times bestseller list for children's picture books. For the first time, it was launched on June 8th.
You sound jealous, Michael. You sound jealous. You know, give her some credit. She wrote a kid's book. It's number one.
Oh, well, here's what she says. While this poem began as a love letter to my husband and son, I'm encouraged to see that its universal themes of love, representation, and inclusivity are resonating with communities everywhere. Many ways pursuing a more compassionate and equitable world begins with these core values. Are you throwing it up yet, Bartlett? Is Bartlett even listening? No. No.
Yeah, this is great stuff.
Yeah. He had no idea what you were talking about.
You're talking about Meghan Markle. I'm listening.
So it's like no matter what she does, you'll trash. No matter what Kamala Harris does, no matter what you have your little targets, the two of you. No matter what comes up about any of them, you trash them. Is that
fair?
All
right, fine. All right, defend her book. Have you read it?
She wrote a kid's book. It's number one. So end of story. I don't have to defend it. I don't have to criticize it. It's a fact.
And defend the interview she did with Oprah Winfrey. Defend the fact that she was a third-rate actress, and now she's all over the world. You don't think there's any calculation going on in her mind of how to play this game?
I can't read into her mind. Oh, you think she said to herself, "All right, my acting career is not going anywhere. I'm going to go marry a prince."
Yep.
I don't know.
That's what I think.
Give her a lot of credit true. if she pulled that off. Give her a lot of credit.
Mm-hmm. Natalie, what do you think? You're more into this royal stuff than.
Oh, here we go.
You gonna
have a cat fight?
You gonna read The Bench, Natalie?
Why would I read a children's book? I mean, really? There's no reason for me to read that.
Do you think Meghan is just, she's the most wonderful woman on the planet? She's so sensitive. She saved Harry from that horrible family that he was in.
Natalie has a good friend who's very friendly with Meghan, yeah. So I think Natalie's gonna come down on Meghan's side.
Well, you know what? I could only go with the friend that I have who has been friends with her since college. She has said that she's always been there for her. She's a good person. So I'm going to have to believe her versus what I read in the papers because I know her.
Didn't you have a friend who went to her Meghan Markle's first wedding? And what did you say about that wedding? And
they said she was not very personable or friendly or gracious to the people who traveled to her destination wedding. But I got that story secondhand. You know, Natalie has firsthand
stories. Well, I had a friend who was in the bridal party of that wedding. So.
I'm sure you did. It's on a beach somewhere, I believe, yep. Jamaica or somewhere.
She was in that wedding, yes.
Yeah.
Interesting, so.
Okay. hey, here's a story that was in the Post. Do you believe this one? I love the way the Post comes up with these stories. They concocted this whole story about you can't get reservations in the Hamptons. It's absolutely impossible. And that people are offering maitre d's, rides on private planes, boat trips, giving us concert tickets, envelopes full of cash just to get a dinner reservation in the Hamptons during the summer. You buying this?
No.
Okay.
Well, it could be true, actually, because the Hamptons are going completely crazy this summer, I hear from people. And I have some friends out there who, you know, you've got to go around to all the maitre d's or the managers of restaurants in April or May and pass out the cash to make sure that you're taken care of at tables throughout the summer. I mean, it is a little bit of a crazy scene kind of going on out there. So,
well, they're claiming one restaurant had a waiting list Saturday night that reached 1,200 people. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I'd buy all this.
Jeez. Stay home and make dinner, for God's sakes. Stay all home right. And make dinner. I mean, the restaurants aren't that good. Unbelievable. So, all right, coming up next. Now, this is going to be fun. Ted Lang, he was the bartender on The Love Boat. He's going to be with us. He's in a new horror movie called Blood Pageant. We'll find out what that's all about. Haven't seen a good horror movie in a long time. I hope this wasn't as good. But I love Ted Lang on The Love Boat. Kind of curious to know what he's been doing since The Love Boat ended in 1980. And Blood Pageant, which is just coming out now. So that's next. Plus, your chance to text in and win a trip to the iHeart Music Festival in Las Vegas this September is coming up. After the news at 9 o'clock, but now is 9 o'clock, so let's get the news.